I just wanted to say thank you, dead man. Thank you. You gave me the fight of my life. Thank you. And here's the thing, because I don't believe you won't be back, not after what I felt last night, not after that magic. You'll be back. And when you're back, I'll be waiting.
Listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, your source for news, views, and opinions on everything wrestling, from the big leagues to the local scene. Now, here's James McDonald and Corey Callahan.
We are full steam ahead on the road to WrestleMania, with the only stop in sight being the Elimination Chamber. Things for the big show are starting to take form, and we're here to break it all down for you. Hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of Smack Talk Radio Live. My name is James McDonald, and I'm joined alongside Corey Callahan, and we are broadcasting to you from the Smack Talk Studios in beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia. Corey, any initial thoughts from the aftermath of the Royal Rumble?
I think I speak for everyone when I say the show wasn't outstanding, but it wasn't terrible either. It really doesn't matter at this point though, because it's come and gone, and we are now 57 days away from the big show, and that's what matters.
That's exactly how I feel, man. We have another great show for you tonight. We'll be talking about the big return of the Dead Man on Monday in our Tale of the Tape, and in honor of that, tonight's top five will be the top five Undertaker returns.
Of course, we're catching you up with all the latest in our post-to-post report, and tonight we get a little more educated, as I had a chance to speak with a New York attorney named Dan Janot, and we're talking the WWE and taxation within the United States. I'll explain later. As always, you can check out www.smacktalkradiolive.com or join in on facebook.com/smacktalkradio.
Right now, though, let's reverse neckbreaker things off with the tale of the tape.
It's time for the Tale of the Tape.
Now, typically, most people would probably sing the song Friday by Rebecca Black. Because it is Friday. But no, I'm not going that route.
Thank you.
I'm going out of the norm. I'm going to sing a song from when I was a kid. It's Friday, and I'm ready to say, pick up my girls and hit the party, hey, tonight.
I guess I wasn't that cool.
Aaliyah. You don't remember Aaliyah?
No.
Oh, it's all right.
Like I said, I guess I wasn't that cool.
No. It was a very cool song when I was a kid.
Well, Friday night, and we're doing Smack Talk Radio Live.
Yes, it's a little different. Usually I would start the show off by saying, Thursday, Smack Talk Radio Live back on the air, but no,
nope.
It's not. It's Friday.
Yep.
And I see you're all decked out in your Vancouver Canucks jersey and hat.
You betcha, just celebrating their wonderful shootout loss to the Red Wings last night.
That was pretty embarrassing, wasn't it? Every shot in the shootout goes in on Roberto Luongo. But
disgusting.
Yeah. How are you doing tonight, James?
I'm doing pretty good, buddy. I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
Ready to go.
You were just saying to me you were tired about 20 minutes ago, but I think you did a five-hour energy shot.
Second wind, my friend, second wind. It's called five-hour energy.
We should come up with an energy shot of our own called Second Wind. That's a good idea.
We should see if we can get them to sponsor us.
That would be a good one as well. All right, this is Smack Talk Radio Live. Of course, our website, www.smacktalkradiolive.com, or, as I always remind everyone, facebook.com/smacktalkradio. Now, I wanted to plug something a little different this week, and I'm hoping people who are tuning into the show can help out. I want some reviews on our iTunes page. If you go to the iTunes store and you type in smacktalkradiolive.com, or sorry, not .com, if you just search for Smack Talk Radio Live, you can find our show on the iTunes store, And if you like the show or if you don't like the show, all I'm looking for is some reviews because... Yep.
Make your voices heard.
We will actually climb up the ladder on the iTunes store so more people can find us and more people can tune in. But the only way that happens is if you actually post reviews on our show through the iTunes page. So...
Plus, it gives us an idea of what we can do better, too, right?
Well, I know we can be way better than we are, but we don't know
how. Speak for yourself.
All right, so the one major difference between tonight's show and Monday's show would be the fact that SRL on a Monday night, it's a little different than tonight, isn't it, James?
Yeah, it's. I would say so, definitely.
And that is because we go over Monday Night Raw right after it happens, where tonight, it's a little more polished. We have interviews and, you know, we have...
A little bit more structured.
Yeah, but Monday, if you haven't checked it out yet, SRL on a Monday night, definitely a good show to check out as well because it's right after Monday Night Raw, and we're actually broadcasting that show live from now on, so you can tune in Monday night at around 9 o'clock Pacific time, and if you want to watch that or listen to that show, all you got to do is go to our Facebook page and look for the live streaming link about 15, 20 minutes before the show starts, or... if you have an iPhone, you can download the Shoutcast app and search for Smack Talk Radio Live on that.
That's right. You can listen to our review of Monday Night Raw as you watch the replay up here in Canada on the Score.
That's right. So here we are. Post Royal Rumble, Sheamus, the 2012 Royal Rumble winner. How are you feeling about that, James?
Like I was saying last week, I don't know how
earlier this week, you mean.
Earlier this week, thank you. Yeah, no, I don't know how I'm feeling about that. I mean... I think it was a last-minute decision on the WWE's part, and I don't know. I would have really rather seen Chris Jericho win it, but...
I think the tentative plan was to have Chris Jericho win it, and in typical WWE fashion, they threw a curveball to the fans, and we were left with Sheamus as the winner.
I think it was Triple H pushing backstage. Personally, that's what I believe, but well, I could
friends.
Be wrong.
Now, you brought up an interesting note. If Sheamus actually chooses to go against Daniel Bryan... at WrestleMania, there's a connection between this year's WrestleMania and last year's WrestleMania, isn't there?
Yeah, last year, Daniel Bryan and Sheamus were actually the dark match at WrestleMania. Now this year, they could be one of the title matches, isn't that?
Like, can that even be considered a credible match, considering it was a dark match last year?
I would say so. Why not?
I don't know. I just... To go from dark match to one of the co-main events, I mean, that's in 1 year... That's saying a lot about the WWE these days.
Are you telling me that Yoshitatsu winning the Battle Royal wasn't a credible match? That was at the year before WrestleMania 26
yeah,
where we were there live.
I know. Yeah, no, I mean, I know what you're saying, but I don't know. I just find that almost laughable that they would actually go that route.
Well, I think it's a testament to the confidence that WWE has in these two guys now that it's been almost like a 360 degree from one WrestleMania to the other. So
it also, I think, probably speaks volumes about where they're at in terms of talent. I mean, they haven't really expanded their talent pool. I mean, the fact that you, I don't know, I'm taking that back. I don't really know what to think of this whole match at this point. I mean, obviously, it hasn't even been confirmed that they are facing off at WrestleMania.
No, it hasn't.
But
it looks very strong. That's the route they're going. Mm-hmm. But we have another pay-per-view to go here, so...
Now, do we see Sheamus announce who he's taking on before the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view?
You know what? That's a good question. I don't know how to answer that.
I don't think we do. I don't think we'll see him confirm who he faces until after the Elimination Chamber match. I think they're going to go a bit of a different route this year.
Yeah.
And because usually we find out almost right away.
Yeah, it's usually the Monday Night Raw after the Rumble that the guy decides, right?
But I think they're going to prolong it this year and make people wait and wonder... And that'll kind of be the build-up for the match itself.
Oh, okay.
But one thing we can look forward to this year is the fact that a streak is on the line at WrestleMania.
It's every year.
And finally, we had some clear direction or clearer direction as to just where exactly the return of this man is heading.
So, Johnny, at this time, it truly warms my heart to let you know that I wish you well in all.
Have it, James. The return of the Phenom, the Dead Man, The Undertaker.
I kind of thought it was going to happen in the Royal Rumble. I was almost sure that the number 30 spot, we were going to have The Undertaker come out, but just like in 2007, but no, it was didn't happen then.
Of course, the big question on everyone's mind with the return of the Dead Man, it's not who he's facing. It's, was he wearing a wig when he made his return on Monday Night Raw?
I think that was the first thing you asked me, too. And I think it's extensions. Because you were saying something about seeing a picture online.
I have seen a photo of The Undertaker where he had no hair.
See, I haven't seen this picture, so no, I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe his hair did grow back. I'm just joking around.
I think it's extensions, because hair doesn't grow that long in that short amount of time.
Whoa. When you're The Undertaker, anything is possible.
I guess.
You can be buried alive and still come back, so why can you not grow hair within 2 weeks? So, The Undertaker, James, possibly facing off against Triple H. Your thoughts?
Possibly.
Well, it's not confirmed.
I think it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But, no, you know what? It's who are you going to put The Undertaker against in WrestleMania? I mean, that's the big question that you got to ask yourself with the way the WWE's roster is nowadays.
Yeah.
And really, the only two people I could see going up against the Taker that would be credible to his streak, or be a credible threat, I should say, to his streak would either be Triple H or Kane at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can you see anybody else?
No. And I've said it since the night after last year's WrestleMania that Triple H would be having a rematch with The Undertaker, because as I aired in the clip off the top of the show,
mm-hmm.
you know, Undertaker said when the Triple H said that when The Undertaker returned, he would be there waiting, and here we are.
I think it'll be a good co-main event for WrestleMania.
Oh,
everybody loves to see the streak on the line.
And I believe from the bottom of my heart that if it's not John Cena that buries The Undertaker, it's got to be Triple H, because Triple H is poised to take over the company when Vince McMahon leaves. If there's anyone that would be able to shut it down and really become that representative as the guy at the top of the WWE chain, this is a good way of doing it.
So let me ask you this, Corey. Do you think the streak will actually be broken, or do you think that will be something that will go down in professional wrestling history as something that can be never touched?
I think it will be broken.
Really? Yeah.
Yes, because as I've said to you before, I really believe that if you shut the streak down at 20 or 19, let's say you shut it down at 19.
Well, that's what it would be this year, because
yes.
he's 19-0. This is his 20th WrestleMania match coming in.
So let's say Triple H shuts him down at 19-0. You can then build a whole other storyline in the future of someone trying to get to 20-0. Do you know what I mean? So I know it sounds crazy.
But 20 years, man?
So? We've come 20 years and here we are with The Undertaker. 20 years can come faster than you think. I mean, if you let him get to 19-0, you shut him down, he never gets to 20.
Yeah.
Some wrestler, whoever they poise that person to be, could then have that opportunity to get to 20-0. It's like a 20-year storyline in the making, where in contrast to that, if you have The Undertaker hit 20-0 and he never does lose, then there's nothing to look forward to.
I got to disagree with you there. I think the streak will never be broken. I think I don't know if he'll finish at 20-0. This might be his last WrestleMania match. Who knows? But I think the streak's going to be kind of like Wayne Gretzky's 200 points in the season or whatever it was. It's going to be something that will probably never, ever be touched.
The other thing you got to remember is part of wrestling is putting the next guy over. So if The Undertaker is close to retirement, and if this was his last WrestleMania, this is a good way of doing that, making sure that there's something to look forward to years down the road when he's gone.
Okay. I wonder if there's anybody on the roster right now currently who's undefeated at WrestleMania. I can't really think of anybody off the top of my head.
Has The Miz lost at WrestleMania?
Last year. Or no, sorry, he won last year.
He won it. I mean, it's a long process in the making. It's a long time to get to that point, obviously.
Come on,
it's not
going
to be The Miz. I'm just saying, they probably haven't found that person yet.
Right.
But at least that opportunity is there. You know, you could even do it if Undertaker did get to 20-0, you could do it where he's now looking forward to 21-0, right? Like that next wrestler is looking for 21-0. But I firmly believe that this year could be the year that they shut it down. He doesn't get to 20, and then you have a whole 20 years to look forward
to.
Yeah,
you see, that's the big question with the Undertaker match going into WrestleMania this year. It is his 20th match, so will he be 20-0 or will he be 19-1? I think that's the big question on everybody's mind. And I think that's going to add a little bit more excitement to that match.
And again, if it's not Triple H that does it, the only other person would be John Cena.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. I can't really see anybody else with I guess the reputation is really what it comes down to to break the streak.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know. Your thoughts on, you know, just like, do you think he actually could do it this year?
Triple H? No, I'm going to say no.
No.
No, I don't think. I think it's going to be 20-0. Like, it's not. I don't think the streak's going to be touched, man.
So why don't you recap everyone on just how Undertaker made his return this week?
Well, it really had to kind of tie in with John Laurinaitis and what's happening with him as well.
We'll get to him.
Because, well, essentially what happened was John Laurinaitis was awaiting his performance review from the WWE Board of Directors because, I mean, there's all these questions from the board now regarding his leadership because he stated that he was going to screw CM Punk out of the title at the Royal Rumble pay-per-view, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, this past week on Raw, after ingratiating himself to all the fans and the crew members and some of the wrestlers, you know, he was shaking hands and giving high fives. And he then had another showdown with CM Punk in the ring. And, you know, CM Punk called him clown shoes, saying goodbye to him. At the end of the show, he would await the board's representative, which, of course, was COO Triple H. And Triple H would then proceed to humiliate John Laurinaitis. He made him apologize first in front of everybody. And then he made this real funny insinuation about Vince McMahon being a genius because of a certain club that he had started. So he was kind of insinuating that he should join his own version of the club. Mm-hmm. So Laurinaitis puts on the chapstick, gets down on his knees. It's pretty funny. But and anyways, just as, you know, Triple H, you know, was about to say, John, I wish you luck in your future endeavors, just like we heard in the clip, Undertaker's music hits, Undertaker comes out. And they have a stare down there, both looking at the... Or Undertaker first looks at the big WrestleMania... What would you call that? That big sign?
It's just the WrestleMania sign.
Yeah, the big sign. So anyways, he's, you know, stares at Triple H and he... Well, they have the stare down and they look at the sign. And then Triple H, you know, pats him on the shoulder. Has to say, nope, don't want to have this match. And he leaves the ring.
Almost an exact replica of what they did 1 year ago when no words were spoken.
Mm-hmm.
Twice now they've done that.
But it's the rules are reversed this time.
Yeah, which is... Very interesting and fresh and new and innovative, and I thought they did a really good job. Obviously, I think that these two will be facing off because, again, it's not confirmed that they are wrestling each other at WrestleMania, but I really do think that it will be these two ultimately. They need to prolong the program on the way to WrestleMania, mm-hmm. So this is a good way to start that off. It'll be interesting. How do you see this playing out? Do you think that what would Triple H's reason be for not facing off against The Undertaker? Like, when he comes out next Monday on Raw, and he's, you know, he...
What would his reason be for not facing off against The Undertaker?
Yeah.
Well, because he wants to prove to the board of directors that he's finally not letting his emotions control his... dictate his actions, right?
Yeah.
And so by refusing to fight to face The Undertaker, he's kind of proving that fact. Like, yeah, you know, I'd like to face him. You know, that's, you know, that's what I feel inside, but I'm not going to let that dictate my actions, so I'm going to refuse to... face The Undertaker, and you know I'm capable to be the GM of Raw.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, and that ties in with John Laurinaitis. Is he going to be fired next week?
Well, that's a good question. Why don't we get to John Laurinaitis and just what exactly happened with him on Monday?
Nah. Come on, Doctor. Hey. Goodbye, everybody. Nah. Hey. Goodbye.
Is a disgrace.
Well, that's quite a performance.
Laurinaitis, though, seems confident.
Nah. Hey. Goodbye, clown shoes.
You know, you call it nervousness. I call it confidence.
First of all, I think you owe me an apology. You thought I was going to screw you out of your WWE title last night, and I didn't. I'm a man of my word.
Well, there you go. That clip there was part of the confrontation that CM Punk and John Laurinaitis had at the beginning of Raw. And so, like, the whole big thing with Monday night on Raw was, will John Laurinaitis be fired?
It's an interesting question.
So, at the end, like I was just explaining earlier, at the end of the show, him and Triple H, they had a little segment where, you know, he's going under his performance review. Wanted to join the Kiss My Ass Club, and yeah, I know I always get a kick out of that.
I think everyone does. That's why they keep bringing it back.
So anyways, the Undertaker's music hits, John Laurinaitis scurries from the ring, and of course the question we're all left with now is was he fired or was he not fired?
which of course just happens to be this week's poll question.
The poll question. Log on to facebook.com/smacktalkradio and cast your vote.
All right. The Smack Talk Radio Live poll question, quite simple. It's even a yes or no answer. Will John Laurinaitis be fired next week on Monday Night Raw?
I don't think he will be.
No?
No, I don't think he will be.
I don't think so either. They've developed this character so well, and they spent so much time and effort. I have a hard time believing they're just going
to scrap. And you know what? And he's really starting to come around on a lot of people, because he is an interesting, dynamic character. He's the villain who doesn't think he's a villain. And those are always the best types of characters, in my opinion, anyways.
Yeah. Why don't you catch everyone up with, you know, just what's the latest with John Laurinaitis? I mean, obviously, he's had this thing going with CM Punk, and at the Royal Rumble, do you think he did a fair job? Like, was he impartial?
You know, that's kind of funny when you look at it too, because there's Dolph Ziggler, who gets beat 4 times, which we'll talk about in a little bit here, and it wasn't called because there was a ref bump. And when Laurinaitis had the chance to go in and make the call, the 1-2-3, or call the submission, you know, he didn't, because he got hit in the head by Dolph Ziggler.
Mm-hmm.
when he got put, I think it was the GTS, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
So
it's a bit of a cliffhanger ending too.
It kind of is. And then when he finally did have the ref come around, he went in there and he mimicked the call as well. So it's kind of, you yeah. know, I don't know. What do you take of that?
Well, I mean, this to me just adds to that whole tweener character that he's portraying. I mean, is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? No one really knows. You see moments where he's a good guy and you see moments where he's a bad guy. So they're purposely giving you that confusion as to what kind of character he is.
And I like that, personally.
I think no matter what, though, people will always boo John Laurinaitis. I can't see anyone ever coming around to start cheering the guy. I think people on podcasts and wrestling shows and on the internet will probably say they like having Laurinaitis around.
Right.
But when you're actually live in that arena, I can't see them ever cheering for John Laurinaitis.
No?
No.
That's an interesting take.
He's a bit of a... He's just like the guy you almost like to hate. You know, I mean, just the fact that he fumbled the pay-per-view name on Monday, you know, instead of saying the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view, he said the Elimination pay-per-view. And it's those mistakes that will never have the crowd behind you, because no one's going to stand behind a guy who's fumbling the simplest of words.
I personally like those little foibles of the mouth that he does.
Absolutely.
I think it adds to him.
Well, when you're at home and you can laugh about it, for sure, it's entertaining. But when you're actually there in person and you're forced to cheer or boo out loud, I don't think people are cheering for John Laurinaitis.
No.
But that being said, they like that. They want to keep him on TV. I really think that they spent a lot of time developing his character.
Oh, absolutely.
And they've taken the spotlight off Vince McMahon. They've taken the spotlight off Vince McMahon, and John Laurinaitis has now become this authority figure on Raw. So Vince can do whatever he needs to do behind the scenes, and John Laurinaitis can do what he does best in front of the scenes, which is
screw up
the pay-per-view name.
That's a good way of looking at it. So yeah, we're left with the big cliffhanger question. Is Laurinaitis fired or is he not? I personally don't think he will be fired. I think next week on Raw, we're going to see that now since The Undertaker has returned, maybe the board of directors has lost a little bit of faith now in Triple H being able to control his emotions. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to keep Laurinaitis in power because now they have these questions.
Well, maybe
about Triple H.
Another way to look at it is maybe Triple H doesn't want to come back because he's now focusing his attention on The Undertaker, if he decides to. And because of that, he doesn't have the time or the power to run Raw at this moment. Mm. So Laurinaitis will stay.
Yeah.
Here's the other issue I have with this whole thing.
What's that?
Why is it that Triple H is the guy that comes out and has the authority to replace John Laurinaitis when it was John Laurinaitis that was the one that took over for Triple H?
Like, yeah, that is kind of
odd,
isn't
it? It's just a complete ridiculous 180, in my opinion. Like, they said to the board of directors has said to Triple H that he has the authority to come back and run Raw whenever he wants.
Yeah.
They were the ones that removed him in the first place. The whole thing is just poorly written, in my opinion.
So, what, a couple of months makes all the difference, I guess?
I guess so.
You just need a couple of months to cool down, Trips, and then, if you want to go back and run things, go ahead.
I know.
I know. It does. Yeah.
And then the other thing that made me laugh was that, you know, remember when Triple H was in charge? Mm-hmm. Guys like Jerry Lawler were saying, oh, we're not going to be working for the WWE as long as you're in power. But then when on Monday, when John Laurinaitis came out for his job review, Jerry Lawler was in favor of him leaving. And then Triple H came out, and Jerry Lawler was almost in favor of that as well. Like, there's just no continuity.
That's the
it's
word.
None. And that's my biggest issue with that. But I hope that they take Triple H out of the picture in terms of running Raw, and then he can focus his attention on The Undertaker. And I wouldn't be surprised if they actually take off the interim tag from John Laurinaitis' job position.
I could see that happening.
Now, you had mentioned someone before who is on a bit of a down streak since the Royal Rumble.
Oh, man. I know. And you know what? This is something that both you and I totally disagree with. And, of course, we're talking about Dolph Ziggler.
I think he's about to plant Ziggler.
So after listening to that, my question to you and to everybody who's listening is, why is Dolph Ziggler being seemingly held back?
This seems to be an ongoing trend for at least 2 years now. He's been on the cusp of main event, and then, just before he gets there, they take him away.
So let me just quickly get us all up to date here with how this whole thing has come down. I mean, like, heading into the Royal Rumble this past Sunday, Ziggler was looking cleaner than ever. I mean, he was scoring multiple wins over the WWE champion, CM Punk. So, I mean, that's looks strong in my eyes. Now, even with the victories, would you agree with me that Ziggler seemed like a second fiddle in the program between CM Punk and John Laurinaitis?
Yes, and I would have been fine with that in the end if Ziggler came out shining, but he didn't.
No.
He came out looking even worse than before.
Like, in the pay-per-view on Sunday, Ziggler would be defeated multiple times by Punk, in an attempt to play up Laurinaitis' claim of screwing Punk out of the title. Now, later on, Ziggler would be an entrant in the Royal Rumble match, but, I mean, even in that, he'd be generally ineffective and just eliminated before even the end guy came out.
Yeah.
So, and then, like we just heard in the clip, the next night on Raw, after being announced as one of the competitors in the Elimination Chamber match, which we will get to in a second here, Ziggler faced off against Randy Orton, and even though it was an excellent match, I mean, he lost cleanly still to a devastating RKO, just boom, pin 1-2-3.
I understand why Randy Orton, you know, he came back at the Rumble, made his return in the ring, obviously in the Royal Rumble, but he made his return to Monday Night Raw, I should say. You could have thrown anyone at him.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you throw Dolph Ziggler at him?
Yeah, exactly. Why wouldn't you feed, like, Jack Swagger to him or something?
Well, because it's Jack Swagger.
But why isn't Dolph Ziggler the top heel in the WWE right now? That's my question. He should be.
He should be, and he's got Vicky at his side, which makes him even more heelish.
Exactly. He doesn't need Vicky to speak for him, though.
And he represents the company well.
Mm-hmm.
He is in shape. He's, you know, he's wrestling day in and day out and providing unbelievable matches. I mean, sometimes he's wrestling two matches in a night.
Oh, it's his work rate is just unbelievable.
So what's the problem?
I don't understand it. Like, why would you have Ziggler lose 6 times in 24 hours after beating the WWE champion multiple times? It just...
Well, to better answer this question, James, we actually are very fortunate enough right now to have Vince McMahon on the line.
And hey, Vince, how are you?
He's going to answer just why exactly he's holding Dolph back. No, he's not. But I would love to get that interview because I'm dying to know what is the deal with holding Dolph Ziggler back.
I don't understand it.
I've said it from the beginning of this show. I think that he should be in the main event spotlight. And this whole CM Punk Dolph Ziggler feud that they had going into the Royal Rumble, the whole thing was rushed. It wasn't the proper feud that these two should have had because those two could have put on an excellent feud. In fact, I'd even go as far as say that Dolph Ziggler versus CM Punk could have been a WrestleMania match.
It could have been, but instead he was like a secondary player. He was like a supporting actor almost, you know?
And it's not like he can't talk on the mic. He's very good on the mic. he can keep up with CM Punk almost.
Oh, he's great on the mic. He's got it all.
And you got Vicky to back you up if you screw up. You know, like if you're lost for words, in comes Vicky with whatever she wants to say. It's a good combination.
He's got all the things that we've always said that a wrestler needs to have. He's got the look. He's got the mic skills. He's got the in-ring talent. So
there's something that they're not seeing.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that his loss of momentum could somehow be tied into maybe Chris Jericho's return recently?
Well, maybe. I mean, maybe Jericho just sidetracked the whole Dolph Ziggler push. That's possible.
It is possible, too. Do you think maybe now they're kind of looking at Chris Jericho as maybe being the top heel?
Well,
the spot that maybe Dolph Ziggler should have had?
Here is my major question with Dolph Ziggler. And this could be the million-dollar question that answers everything. Just who is Dolph Ziggler facing at WrestleMania?
That's the million-dollar question.
Because I can tentatively plan an entire WrestleMania card in my head at this point, but I cannot figure out where Dolph Ziggler is fitting into this.
What do you think about them pushing somebody like Kofi Kingston and having maybe Kofi Kingston and Dolph Ziggler at WrestleMania?
I'm not excited about that.
That wouldn't excite you?
No, not at all. To me, that's just slapping two wrestlers together in the ring. I'm not excited about that.
I think it's because they would have to build up Kofi's reputation a little bit more, too.
Part of me wonders if they're going to do another celebrity angle with Dolph, you know, like what they did with Snooki. And
I sure hope
not. I know. I do, too.
That's just a waste of the guy's talents, man.
Yeah.
You know?
But I just, there's that. That's the question at this point. Just who's he facing? Because you never know. This whole thing could be, this could all be happening for a reason with a big payoff at the end where it benefits Dolph to no end. But it could not. But I think that this whole thing can be answered with just who he is facing at WrestleMania.
Yeah, that's a good one. So let me ask you one last question here about it now that we're on to it. What do you think about maybe him and Swagger joining up and forming a tag team and running through the tag team division? Because, I mean, let's face it, nobody's given any credibility to Epico and Primo right now.
No, but that's a good idea as well. But then on the flip side, who are they going to be feuding with as a tag team?
Well, maybe make some more tag teams, right?
Yeah, they just don't have that.
What about making a tag?
The roster's just not deep enough.
What about having a tag team like R-Truth and Kofi Kingston put together? Have them face like Ziggler and Swagger. I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out there.
Right? Yeah, no, that's a good idea. I mean, maybe that is a potential good tag team match. Because at this point, they don't really have any real tag team match heading into WrestleMania. So maybe that is an option.
Yeah.
I don't think that...
Their tag division is just so...
It is, but I don't think...
Unbelievably weak right now.
I think that's holding Ziggler back if you put him on a tag team.
I know. He needs to have singles success. And let's face it, his... What was it? Half an hour championship reign was...
He needs to have that, the belt around his waist.
They should never have done that.
He needs to have the belt around his waist. You got this guy who's cocky as hell. You know, he's got the blonde hair. He's got the abs. He's doing sit-ups in the ring while the guy's laying on the mat. The guy's got everything except the belt to back it up. Why not give him that for a bit?
I don't understand. So there you have it. We here at Smack Talk Radio Live, we are official Dolph Ziggler fans.
I know. Jeez.
Apparently the WWE is not, though. They don't agree with us.
I don't think we could talk any better about the guy. Maybe Alberto Del Rio. Maybe he comes back and faces Ziggler.
It's two heels, though.
Well, maybe Del Rio comes back as a face. Not happening.
I don't see Del Rio coming back as a face. Well, hey, at least Ziggler's in the Elimination Chamber match.
Yes, which was announced this Monday on Raw.
Without further ado, let me introduce the participants in the Elimination Chamber match. WWE Champion CM Punk. Kofi Kingston. Dolph Ziggler. The Miz. And R-Truth. And Chris Jericho.
Well, there you have it. That was John Laurinaitis this past week on Raw announcing the Raw side Elimination Chamber match, which actually looks like it's going to shape up to be a pretty good match, in my opinion.
So who do you think, early prediction, has a good opportunity of taking this in this match?
Well, honestly, I got to tell you, there's only two people that I could see winning this match. Either CM Punk wins and retains his title, or Chris Jericho, which would set up him and CM Punk, with CM Punk using maybe his rematch clause heading into WrestleMania. And that would build up that feud that way, maybe.
Here's my twist to the whole thing. Maybe Ziggler takes it because Jericho screws Punk at the Elimination Chamber.
And then Punk and Jericho was a non-title match?
Mm-hmm.
I never thought of that. That'd be kind of an interesting
Those way, two don't really need the title to get a successful program at WrestleMania.
But then why would you build up CM Punk as this big champion since Survivor Series only to have it taken off the pay-per-view? Like, see, to me, that just kind of devalues the belt almost heading into their biggest show of the year.
Well, I mean, if you put it on Ziggler, you just sat here 5 minutes ago telling me how awesome you think Ziggler is and you'd love to see the belt on him, and then you're telling me that if you put the belt on him, it's devaluing it?
It kind of does. I mean, 1 month heading into the big show and you're going to change the belts?
Yeah, but it's for storyline purposes. It's to fuel Jericho versus Punk. It's not about Ziggler taking the belt. It would be the fact that Jericho screwed Punk. And, you know, it could be Jericho's way of saying to Punk, you're not the best in the world, and I just proved it because you no longer have the belt on your around your waist.
So what about like a triple threat maybe at WrestleMania? You got Ziggler and Jericho and Punk in a match. Would that excite you?
No. Really? I want to see Punk and Jericho one-on-one.
Punk and Jericho?
Yeah. But... And someone like Ziggler, to have a successful program thrown together at the last second, it could be for the belt. Because that's always a good out. It's always a good way out to have a quick program started heading into WrestleMania is, you know, title match. That's the start to the story right there, right?
Yeah.
Who's in line for the title, right? If you start building Punk and Jericho now, you don't really need the title to make that program work. You may need the program to work if you're throwing Dolph together at the last second with someone.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
No, yeah. No, I hear what you're saying there. So I guess we're completely writing off Miz, R-Truth, and Kofi Kingston then.
Yeah.
No chance there, eh?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they're very high on Miz these days. And Kofi Kingston, I don't think he has any business even being in the Elimination Chamber match. Do you?
Well, I think they got to push Kofi Kingston because let's face it, they owe the guy, really. Like, he's had such a crap year because of being stuck with Evan Bourne and him having all his problems. And really, the one that was taking the punishment when he shouldn't have been, it was Kofi Kingston, I think.
I think he's just in that Elimination Chamber match because of his one spot at the Royal Rumble where he did the handstand over to the stairwell. Or staircase. Steel steps, I should say.
Ah, okay.
It's not a stairwell. It's not a staircase. It's a steel... What is it? Steel?
The steel steps. Isn't it? Yeah, the steel steps, yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess one cool spot equals a push in the WWE.
That's all you need. Unless you're John Morrison. Then you go down.
Yeah.
Now, you had said that the SmackDown Elimination Chamber was going to be announced tonight.
That's right. The SmackDown Elimination Chamber, it's actually going to feature Daniel Bryan, Randy Orton, Wade Barrett, The Big Show, Cody Rhodes, and originally it was going to be Mark Henry. But a little bit of a spoiler here, if you haven't seen SmackDown tonight, they did an angle where Teddy Long kind of suspended Mark Henry off of television indefinitely just to, you know, maybe give him a little bit of time to heal up the nagging injuries that he's been suffering from lately. And guess whose replacement in the match is going to be?
Who?
It's your favorite.
Who?
The Great Khali.
Oh, my God.
So right away, we already know that the Raw match is going to be way better than the SmackDown one, but...
Well, that's not much of a spoiler because... You gotta be wanting to watch SmackDown for it to be spoiled.
Yeah, that is true. Or any quick prediction on that one?
I don't know. I would say that Daniel Bryan would probably retain.
That's exactly what I was gonna say. I really cannot see anybody other than Daniel Bryan retaining.
It's early. We'll have that conversation next week.
You betcha.
All right. This was Tale of the Tape. Now's a good time to remind everyone. We want you to email us. Just come on. Send us a message. Tell us what you're thinking about the WWE these days.
Tell us how much you hate Corey.
That's right. Tell us how much you hate James. Whatever. On air at smacktalkradiolive.com. Now, coming up tonight on Smack Talk Radio Live, we, of course, are going to have the post-to-post report. And I got to speak with Dan Janot, New York attorney. We're going to talk WWE and taxation laws.
Also coming up later on tonight, tonight's top five will be The Undertaker's Returns.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live. She's gone.
Catching you up with the business of the business. It's time for the Post to Post Report.
All right. The Post to Post Report, catching you up with the business of the business. Wow, you're learning, James.
I'm behaving, man.
You are. I got to give you that tonight. All right.
Well,
the Post to Post Report this week, let's start it off, James. You know, our weekly WWE Network update.
Holy smokes, what a shit show this is turning out to be.
Now, Legends House, the show that they originally planned to put on the WWE Network, that's scheduled to start filming this week, which to me is kind of funny because we have no information about the WWE Network. In fact, they've even stopped advertising it altogether. But regardless, it's being filmed at the Harpo Marx Estate in Rancho Mirage near Palm Springs. Now, the legends rumored to be included are Mean Gene Okerlund, Dusty Rhodes, Roddy Piper, and your favorite, the Iron Sheik.
Sweet!
Now, the tentative plan is that they will live at the mansion until March 31st, which is, of course, the day before WrestleMania 28. Most of the show will be shot at the house, but the legends will also explore the local community, including golf and hot air balloon outings. Originally planned for the WWE Network, but because of its delay, reports are suggesting it could air on the Sci-Fi Network. Now, some new news, though, on the WWE Network front, as the upcoming network could feature an exclusive cruiserweight show.
That would be really cool.
The WWE has apparently been scouring the independent scene, looking for talents weighing in around the 200-pound mark. Now, in December, the WWE held a pilot TV taping at Florida's Sun Life University for an undisclosed project. Now, the WWE reportedly loves the feel of this building, and it's looking to film the new Cruiserweight show there. So I guess that's part of what the undisclosed project was.
I think a Cruiserweight show would be really cool. But the thing I'm really happy about, Iron Sheik is involved with Legends House, so I will be watching it for sure. I mean, anything with the Iron Sheik is just guaranteed hilarity.
There you go.
Now, WWE announced the hiring of Eric Pankowski as the new Senior Vice President of Creative and Development on Wednesday. Pankowski, previously a senior executive at production company Reveal and as well as Warner Brothers, will report to WWE Executive Vice President of Creative, Stephanie McMahon. Now, in this role, he will be responsible for the creative development of all television content, including concepts that go beyond in-ring, such as reality and kids programming, the management of WWE's creative writing teams, and of course, selling programs to major cable and broadcast networks. Now, Pankowski spent more than 12 years of his Warner Brothers career serving as the Vice President of Paramedia Incorporated, where he helped develop and launch Lopez Tonight and helped manage pilots and sale presentations for all projects, including TMZ as an example. Prior to Paramedia, Pankowski oversaw the Ellen DeGeneres Show, as well as several other shows.
So I guess we're going to get a mix of Ellen with TMZ. Not just...
That'll just make it all that much better.
No, I don't know where I was going with that. Bring back George Lopez, that's what I say.
Yeah.
Now, federal agents arrested 28-year-old Yonjo Kiora this week for criminal infringement of copyright, and they're in the process of seizing his 16 domains that allegedly streamed content from entities such as WWE, TNA, UFC, NFL, NHL, and the NBA. Kiora had been allegedly streaming content from his home in Comstock Park, Michigan, since February of 2010 on several different internet domains. Some of those domains included firstrow.tv, firstrowsports.com, uwwe.com, and more. Now, the way they did it was an agent posed as a WWE employee, and they had contacted Kiora about purchasing some of his associated domains. Kiora, being the smart guy that he was, apparently responded back, and the feds tracked him down for the arrest.
Oh, you get what you deserve, I guess, is all I got to say about that one.
I'm actually surprised that the WWE, UFC, TNA, whoever, they don't crack down more on this sort of stuff, because it's quite easy to watch a pay-per-view for free on the internet. You think they would spend a little more time and a little more of their assets in this department.
No kidding, because that's a big loss of revenue right there.
Mm-hmm.
So... Well, moving on, The Rock's new movie, Journey 2, next weekend in North America, but has found success internationally as the film has opened in other markets already. So far, the film has grossed $5.7 million in South Korea, $5.2 million in Australia, $3.7 million in China, $2.8 million in Malaysia, $1.7 million in Singapore, and $152,000 in New Zealand. Now, there's a joke in here somewhere regarding The Rock's success and the WWE Studios' success, but... I think for the time being, I'll leave that one alone.
I think it's something to do along the lines of the WWE Studios wishes they could get the man they created, The Rock, in their own movies.
I know, it doesn't... No. Oh, man.
Now, in their latest earnings report, THQ, of course the video game maker for the WWE, they reported that they shipped more than 2 million units of the WWE 12 video game in the previous quarter. This is considered successful for the company and right on target with projections. Mm-hmm. WWE 12 continues to be one of the strong points, though, for the video game maker, which is currently in company restructuring. That company's actually in a bit of trouble right now, James.
THQ, really?
Yeah, I'm going to actually try and get someone from THQ to come on our show just talk to us about this WWE franchise. And the most important question that I'm going to ask this person... Why have you not bought the rights to WWF No Mercy and updated it and come up with it all over
again? Exactly. I'm sorry, as good as WWE 12 is, there is just still, to this day, no wrestling game that can touch No Mercy.
It's a simple answer. You want to be successful? Hire Aki Man. Now, in terms of WWE financials this week, current WWE stock price, $9.91 a share. That's up 38 cents from last week's episode. In terms of television ratings this week, the January 30th edition of Monday Night Raw, that scored a 3.55 rating, up 12% compared to the 3.18 rating last week heading into the Royal Rumble. It's actually a really good number,
James.
Things
are on the upswing.
This would be the highest rated Raw since the night after WrestleMania 27 on April 4th last year, which scored a 3.82 rating. Now, just to compare the night after last year's Royal Rumble to the night after this year's Royal Rumble, last year's episode, that scored a 3.48 rating with an average of 5.28 million viewers. Just to go back, this week's Raw scored a 3.55. So last year, 3.48, this year, 3.55. So it's actually a pretty strong show. Now, this week, Raw averaged 5.22 million viewers. That's up 13% compared to last week's lead-in show. It was the first time that Raw cracked 5 million viewers since first time Raw cracked 5 million viewers since October 10th.
Oh, wow.
And the most overall viewers since May 23rd, 2011, which was the first Raw after Randy Savage's death. The first hour of Raw, it averaged 5.32 million, and in the second hour, it slipped to 5.12, not a huge deal. Still, very good second hour. In fact, the best second hour since July 25th, 2011.
The trend is continuing then, where they're losing viewers heading into the second hour.
Yeah, this would be quite minor, but yes, definitely is continuing. So yeah, there is the post-to-post report catching you up on the business of the business.
I'm not going to behave all the time.
All right. Now, James, while we're talking about financials and, you know, everything in between, I really started to think about just why has wrestling... Remember on last week's episode, we talked to the Vancouver Athletic Commission?
Mm-hmm. That was a really good one.
And, you know, I'm just thinking to myself, why has the WWE not come to Vancouver more often? I'm trying to play every possible scenario in my head. And one reason I thought about was a possible reason why the UFC is saying they're not coming to Vancouver anymore. And that's because of high insurance rates. And from what I hear from certain people, that the taxes in Vancouver are just a lot higher compared to other municipalities. I guess every municipality has different, or every state or province has different tax laws and different tax rates.
That's
right?
True. Yeah.
So obviously that could mean a world of difference for someone like the WWE when they come in, and let's say it costs the WWE $20 million to put on WrestleMania. Well, paying 10% tax on $20 million,
that's
quite a lot.
$2 million bucks?
You
betcha.
So even just a 1% difference can mean the world to the WWE. In fact, it could make or break where they do these shows. And it got me wondering, and I also, you know, I looked up on the internet about just where does the WWE sit with taxation and how much are they paying in taxes and that sort of stuff. And I stumbled across an article written by a man named Dan Janot, and he is actually a former law student at the, I believe it was the university, where is it here? He's a graduate of the George Washington Law School, and that's in New York. So this guy, he knows what he's talking about. And when he was graduating law school, he put together a final paper for his final project. And he, being the wrestling fan that he is, chose to talk about the WWE and the taxation laws. Because as you know, with WrestleMania, there is a bidding process now.
Oh, of course.
So part of this bidding process would be when these cities approach the WWE about bringing WrestleMania to their town, part of that package that they put together for the WWE is just what kind of tax breaks are they going to give the WWE? It happens here in Vancouver with Hollywood. You know, Hollywood wants to film a movie in Vancouver. Well, Vancouver gives Hollywood or these major motion picture companies a tax break as an incentive
to
come and film in Vancouver.
To make it lucrative for them, right? So they can save a little bit of money.
Because you could probably film a movie in a variety of places. It's which place is going to attract you the most, and a good way to be attracted is by having to not pay a lot of tax.
And which place is going to have the least overhead, right?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Now, in the early days of wrestling, obviously WWE didn't have a leg to stand on. You know, they're trying to get this WrestleMania show off the ground. There's no real history with the organization.
Right.
There's no reputation.
Now they're a $1 billion publicly traded company. So
things have changed.
They've
right?
got a little bit of clout now.
Because when WrestleMania comes to a city, for example, when it's coming to Miami this year, it's going to pump about $50 million into the local economy, which is huge.
It's very big.
So you want to attract that money to your town.
Yep.
And one way that these cities can do that, or states, I should say, it's not the town, it's the state that that city is in. One way that those states can do that is by offering a tax incentive. So I decided to contact the expert, Dan Janot, who wrote that paper. And
perfect.
He is a bit of an expert on the whole thing. And I had a chance to talk with him earlier today, just exactly how it all works and just what is the relationship with WWE and each state's tax laws. Here is Dan Janot. I want to start right from the beginning. WrestleMania 1 or even WrestleMania 2 or 3. Tell us how it would work back then when the WWE wanted to go to a city. Just how does it work in terms of taxation? And was there any incentive at that point for the WWE to come to that city?
You know, if you remember wrestling back in the day, they claimed wrestling was real and that all parts of it were legitimate. Now, of course, we know today that it's staged. But, you know, back then, wrestling was viewed very similarly. You know, there wasn't really the understanding of it, at least among governments and state governments that there is today. To an extent, it was regulated very much in the same way that boxing was. It was regulated by state athletic boards. And WrestleMania, of course, you know, we're talking now the early 80s, wrestling wasn't as big as it was today. WrestleMania wasn't as big a deal as it was today. And the leverage in terms of the battle over paying taxes, the advantage is really held by the states over professional wrestling companies.
Now, would it be safe to say that it would be that the WWE would be, or the WWF at the time, would they be almost right. lucky to be accepted into a certain city to host WrestleMania?
Well, you know, it wasn't so much lucky. There were some real tax obstacles, though, they did have to overcome. One of the more famous being the media. It was something called the media rights tax. It took place in New Jersey, and it was there were some states were actually trying to levy additional taxes on the WWE, and they made it more costly for them to do business, which was, you know, really an obstacle at the time.
Now, that being said, you had mentioned New Jersey. That is a special time, or that is a special city, because you had mentioned to me before that the WWE had actually boycotted New Jersey early on. Is that correct?
That's right. So what happened was, we're talking about WrestleMania 4 and WrestleMania 5. WrestleMania 4 and 5 were both held at the Trump Plaza in New Jersey. Now, both of those events brought in a lot of revenue for the state of New Jersey through sales taxes that were brought in through a series of measures. And one of the taxes was what I mentioned before called the media rights tax. Now, this tax was specially, it was on organizations that were regulated by the State Athletic Control Board and operated pay-per-view broadcasts out of that state. Now, the WWE, then WWF, people really didn't understand, you know, what it was. And so it was regulated as boxing would be. By the State Athletic Control Board. They charged taxes based on the idea that they would be able to pay for they would have medics on staff and so forth to make sure that the wrestlers were, medically fit in order to compete. So one of these taxes was the media right tax. It was pretty expensive, and it cost the WWE a fair bit of business. So after WrestleMania 4, before WrestleMania 5, we're talking about 1989 right now, the WWE basically tried to get out of this tax, and they tried a couple different things. First thing they tried was to sue in court and say that the tax on the WWE was unconstitutional. It didn't work for a variety of reasons that, you know, we went over in law school and really aren't that interesting. But then their next step was political action. And what they did was they basically told the WWE, told the state of New Jersey that we won't operate any events here anymore until you get rid of this tax. And basically tried to force the state of New Jersey's hand. And it worked. For 8 years, the state of New Jersey the WWE boycotted the state of New Jersey and wouldn't hold any wrestling events in that state.
And then that eventually changed because New Jersey had reversed their decision. Is that correct?
That's right. In 1997, the WWE got New Jersey to change its tax. Governor Whitman, who was the governor of New Jersey, took the tax off the books and it said, "We want your business back in our state." And sure enough, in 1997, SummerSlam was the first major wrestling event that they had coming up. They brought it back to the state of New Jersey, and they held it in East Rutherford, New Jersey. And they were able to, New Jersey once again brought in those sales taxes. By removing the tax, they encouraged the WWE to come in.
So I just want to recap here for a second. So typically what happens with the WWE and these cities is, obviously, any company operating within a state or a province up in Canada, they have to pay their tax, whether it's a sales tax or whatever taxes are imposed on that state or province. Now, what happens with the WWE is, and other things as well, like, for example, with a traveling rock band, or let's say with a movie company, for example, if a Hollywood movie company wants to come to Vancouver and they want to film a movie here, the province of British Columbia would offer a tax incentive. Now, that's what you're saying the state of New Jersey did with the WWE in this instance. But prior to that, there were no tax incentives. Is that right?
Well, there are two things to talk about. One are tax incentives, and one are the removing of an additional tax. There was a tax in place. They were withdrawing money from the WWE. These tax, and what they did was they didn't give them an incentive yet. That was to come a little bit later on. There would be incentives for the WWE to do business. But what they did do was they removed the tax that was in place. It effectively had the same effect of lowering taxes for the WWE. But it is worded a little differently.
And what kind of money are we talking about here? Are we talking hundreds of thousand dollars? Are we talking just a few thousand dollars? Like, what is this tax break that the WWE could possibly receive from states?
Well, the actual tax, and I'm going off memory, I believe was a couple hundred thousand dollars worth of taxes that were at the time. And so it was actually quite a bit of money that was in place. And this was, you know, tax on the broadcast, you know, just sort of an additional levy tax on the WWE that took place across both WrestleManias 4 and 5.
Now, how often does this happen? I mean, you had mentioned New Jersey, but does this happen in other states? Are there other cities that the WWE boycotts because they're not getting the tax breaks that they want to receive?
You know, the other real famous instance happened in Georgia. It was a few years ago. You may be able to remember better than me, but there was a WrestleMania that was going to be held in Atlanta. And what happened was one of the members of the state government in Georgia, I can't remember who, basically suggested that they were going to tax the WWE in addition. They were going to impose an additional fine on the WWE. And one of the spokespeople for the WWE said, "We won't do business there if they levy this additional tax." And really, it's a weapon they haven't pulled out often, but it is a weapon that seems to work quite well because Georgia reversed course. They didn't levy the additional tax. And so, you know, the 8-year boycott of New Jersey, I think, really sent home the message that you don't, if you try to levy additional taxes on us, we'll be able to avoid them.
Now, is this fair? I mean, is this a common practice with states and traveling road shows?
You know, it's a commonly threatened practice, I believe, among businesses. I don't know how often it really works. It's what's interesting about it is that, you know, you hear all the time from, you know, taxes force, you know, if you tax us too much, we'll move. It's hard for places to do that effectively when you have, let's say, 300, 400 employees operating out of a city. It's hard to, you know, in whatever city you're in, it's hard to say we're going to move all 400 of our employees to another state. What is possible is a situation like WWE where they can move, you know, they hold events and they hold, you know, Raw and SmackDown every week and a number of house shows every week and pay-per-views 12 times a year. And all of those can take place at any city. They are, in effect, a traveling roadshow. And that's what's unique about them. They're uniquely situated to really take advantage of the ability to move when they have a tax situation that doesn't suit them.
Okay. Now, we talked early days of WWE and, you know, WrestleMania 3 and 4 and that sort of thing. Now, we're now in 2011. We have WrestleMania 28 coming up in Miami. That's a bit of that's a completely different scenario than what you had just mentioned. Is that right?
That's right. In the old days, the old days being the late 1980s, there were states were trying to levy additional taxes on the WWE. They were trying to put additional fines on them in order to try and draw in more revenue for the state. The new trend has been for states to give tax breaks to the WWE to draw them in. WrestleMania has now become a bidding war for the events for WrestleMania in particular and for a number of other events. And what states will do is they will give tax credits to the WWE to draw them in. For WrestleMania, I believe around 28, the one in Miami this year, the state of Florida, in order to encourage them to come to Miami, offered a $250,000 tax credit to the WWE, basically saying you do not have to pay $250,000 worth of taxes you would otherwise owe. When you compare this with New Jersey, where they were trying to levy additional fines on them, it really has reversed course. There are, you know, 14 cities bidding against each other effectively for the WWE's business.
And you had mentioned $250,000 tax credit. What would that what would that figure be based on? Like, how large of scale of taxes would the WWE be paying to Florida for WrestleMania?
Well, the numbers that I found were that in WrestleMania a few years ago, I think it was 2009 in Houston, in Texas, they brought in a little over $5 million worth of tax revenue, which is a significant amount. Now, you know, $250,000 of that, if you think of what's that slopped off, it doesn't seem too much. Effectively, this was a good deal for both sides. The problem is that you're going to have states bidding against each other higher and higher amounts. If it costs $250,000 in tax credits to bring the WWE in this year, what's it going to cost next year?
Well, and that's exactly it. I'm thinking to myself, how high does this tax credit get? I mean, if you have four cities bidding for WrestleMania to come to their city, and, you know, WrestleMania has been known to bring in about $50 million to their local economy for one weekend.
Right.
How high of tax credits could it get to?
Well, there's two numbers. I hope that it wouldn't go higher than the amount of tax revenue brought in from a government perspective. It wouldn't make sense for big government. Obviously, the WWE would like that not to be the case. But, you know, there was about $50 million worth of revenue and about $5 million in taxes brought in. So, I mean, and there, you know, politicians like to bring these events in. They provide jobs for the local economy. You know, they provide additional sales for all the people working in the buildings. So it's a boon to the politicians, and at current, it's been a boon to the states. How high can it get? You know, I wouldn't want to guess, but you know, it's been growing, and I don't see any reason for it to slow down at this point.
We had talked about the traveling rock band or those types of shows that come to other states. Now, does this happen with them as well, or is the WWE in a separate entity themselves because they have that leverage of continually bringing a show to these states?
You know, WWE, yeah, they do have leverage that's different. There's a couple of differences between, you know, states do offer filming credits for certain things. You know, it's hard to generalize about such a big area, but the WWE really is specially situated for a couple of reasons. Number one, they have continued business. There are always new events that need to come out, and those attract fans on a repeated basis. So if you have an event in New Jersey, you know, if Bruce Springsteen comes to New, well, Bruce Springsteen's a bad example, but if another musician comes to New Jersey, it may take, you know, you're not encouraged so much to see the same show twice. With the WWE, it's a new show every time. They're putting on live, basically new live theater each time through, each time they come to the town. So they really have an advantage over them in that sense. They have an advantage over sports organizations, which basically where scheduling is booked in advance and where there is a hometown rooting interest. So the New York Yankees have to play 81 of their home games in New York. And the way the schedule is built is very structured in order to make the league fair. They have a tremendous amount of freedom and are really situated very well. If you really want to design a business that had the ability to take advantage of tax laws, it would be mobile. It would be able to go anywhere. And, you know, if the WWE avoids a state, they can, the fans in that state can still be fans. I can watch Raw from my living room no matter where they're filming. And that is a real advantage for them, and it really gives them leverage when you're talking about state tax laws.
Now, I know your paper wasn't about the Super Bowl, but I'm thinking in my head that there's probably a bidding process with the Super Bowl as well. Is it safe to say that tax credits probably would happen with the Super Bowl as well?
You know, I'd have to look it up, but I would certainly think so. I mean, you're any big event like that, WrestleMania isn't as big as the Super Bowl. Despite what you may hear, but it is very big in and of itself. But I would be shocked. I mean, the Super Bowl brings in, you know, a small fortune. And what's great about these events for local states and why they want to bring them in is because they are out-of-state tax dollars. So when WrestleMania happens in Miami, people from Georgia, people from all over the country, it really is. I believe there were people at last WrestleMania, there was a press release saying there were people there from, you know, about all 50 states and, you know, some dozen odd countries. It's a global event, and people travel from all over the world to go to WrestleMania and from all over the world to go to the Super Bowl and from all over the world, you know. And those, they really provide an opportunity for states to get out-of-state tax dollars. And the Super Bowl, certainly one imagines, you know. You hear about the International Olympic Committee, you know, you've heard stories about, you know, sort of unfair bribery and things of that nature going on. I don't know too much about it, but you would certainly imagine they would offer legal tax credits in order to bring that type of business into their community.
And there's nothing illegal about any of this. I mean, this is probably something that happens with many states with many different businesses, right?
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing illegal about it. It makes sense. It makes sense for both. And it really, you know, it's good. It's good business, as JR might say. What do people get out of it? You know, the states get out of it taxed out. You know, if you're Miami and you say we gave them $250,000 to bring WrestleMania, yes, that's true. But they got, you know, $4.5 million in tax revenue they wouldn't have gotten if WrestleMania had been held in another city. So it's good for the states. It's good for the WWE, obviously. They get a tax break out of this, and they get the best tax break out of it that they can get. So really, you know, there's nothing illegal or sinister about any of this. It's just smart business. Now, it can get a little out of hand, and you know, it's been known to happen in a few other industries where when the tax breaks outweigh the tax income, then it can start to become problematic. But we're not there yet, and that hasn't been an issue yet.
And I guess the moral of the story here is if you want your city to bring WrestleMania to your city, I should say, you better be prepared to offer some tax credits.
Absolutely. You can't tax them anymore. They have the advantage.
All right, Dan. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming on the program.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So there you go. Dan Janot, lawyer from New York City, James. We're moving up in the world here.
Smart guy.
Well, I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, obviously, we're straying away from the normal stuff we do talk about on Saturday night, or Saturday Night Live. Oh, my God.
Your mind's just somewhere else today.
Smack
man.
Talk Radio Live. I'm not with it tonight. But, you know, I wanted to really bring that point up. And, you know, what, we have to talk sophisticated for a little bit? I'd be interested to know how many people actually tuned out by now. Because if you can't sit through that interview, I actually find that very fascinating. The fact that the WWE has completely reversed roles in terms of taxation.
No, I think that's very interesting as well.
And they have this leverage on cities. And that's huge. That just shows the state of your company. So do I... I think it's an interesting interview. I hope others agree. I spent a lot of time trying to track this guy down, and I really think that, you know, it's worth talking about.
I think that just proves to everybody that the WWE is the major leagues when it comes to when it comes to professional wrestling. Right?
He actually does say, I had to edit it out because the interview went a little long, but he actually mentions TNA, and, you know, I asked, straight up asked him, like, are these, does TNA have the same benefits? And he said, no, not a chance.
I mean, it's true. I mean, WWE is the... Yeah, they're like the they're the big leagues of professional wrestling.
Now, the question I have is, do you think Vancouver would ever offer tax breaks to the WWE to bring WrestleMania here?
Well, if they were smart, they would, but I don't, I don't know.
It's actually funny. We had our interview last episode with Athletic Commission.
That's why I'm kind of juggling my answer here.
And I'm actually, since we've aired that interview, I've actually had a couple people tell me that not everything that they said was true, and that maybe that this WrestleMania bid committee is not everything that it appears.
A little bit of controversy, maybe.
Perhaps. And maybe it starts with the taxation. But regardless, I just wanted to say thanks to Dan Janot. I tracked him down. He came on the show and provided his expert opinion, and
Thank you, Dan.
Appreciate him doing that, and I hope to have him back on the show one day if we ever do need legal opinion in the world of professional wrestling.
He's the guy to go to.
We got to take a little break, but coming up on Smack Talk Radio Live, it's the local wrestling scene. And we're going to run down ECCW's next show titled Vendetta.
Also in tonight's top five, we're going down the top five Undertaker returns.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live.
The local wrestling scene, bringing you up to date with the promotions all over the Pacific Northwest.
All right, the local wrestling scene.
That's right.
Pacific Northwest, let's talk about it.
Let's talk tonight a little bit about the ECCW, the Elite Canadian Championship Wrestling now. No more Extreme, they threw that out the window.
Can't screw that up anymore.
Nope, can't screw that up. Now, this past Friday, the 27th of January, they had a big show out at Bridgeview Hall in Surrey, and it was called Clash of the Titans. I'm just going to run down the results of the card of that show. So, the first match of the night was a ECCW title, because they had this, they have a brand new title now, and they had a tournament to determine who the new champion was going to be.
Yes.
So in the first quarterfinal match of the night, it was Tony Barone versus Nick Price, and Tony Barone ended up winning the match. Then they had a tag team match. It had your absolute favorite guy in the world, Azeem the Dream.
Ugh.
So Azeem the Dream and Sid Sylum, they beat Bishop and Ethan HD, I believe his name was. Then they had a two-on-one handicap match, and that had Cremator going over Matt Ecstatic and Patrick Large.
I believe it's the debut of Ethan HD as well, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah, he made his debut at this show.
Oh, cool.
So I don't know much about him. We'll have to figure
that
out.
No, this is a show I really wanted to make it out to, but I couldn't do it, unfortunately.
And I was out of town working, so.
There you go.
It's a bit of a scarce local wrestling scene this week, just because we weren't at the show, but at least we can run down the results.
That's right. So anyways, then it moved into the semifinal matches for the new ECCW title, and the first one had Pete Powers defeating Jordy Taylor. Then the next one had El Fantasmo, and he beat Tony Barone, who beat Nick Price earlier in the night, like I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. Then in the big match of the night, it had gorgeous Michelle Starr taking on Scotty Mac. And who do you think won that one, Corey?
Well, that's a very interesting match, one that I'm particularly interested in because the history with these two goes back for a really, really long time. And Being that was in an ECCW show, I would think that Scotty Mac would take it. But that being said, Michelle Starr is a very good competitor as well, so it really could go either way.
Well, I was kind of calling Michelle Starr to win this match, and he ended up doing it. He beat Scotty Mac. Yeah, he beat him cleanly.
That's not bad.
Pinned him. And then in the
Do you know what the finish was by chance?
Unfortunately, I don't. No. I'm scouring down the card for everybody out there.
We'll have to find out.
But the final match of the night, it was the first ladder match at Bridgeview Hall in 9 years, and it was the final for the new ECCW title, and that had Pete Powers and El Phantasmo going at it, and believe it or not, Pete Powers is your new Elite Canadian Championship Wrestling champion.
That is very interesting, because I definitely did not pick Pete Powers to win that title.
Yeah, you know, I didn't pick him either, but, you know, good on him.
What are your thoughts on him taking the belt?
Well, you know what? Pete Powers, he kind of reminds me of, like, he's got the look of one of the old school wrestlers from, like, the 80s, you know? He's got the headband, he's got the big muscular body, and
he's kind of like ECCW's Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, that's
Can I make that comparison?
That's a good comparison. I would agree with you there.
He's very, I think he's very good. I mean,
No, he is. I've seen a lot of matches that he's been in, and no, he's a very good worker. And
I'd like to see him do a little more high risk moves in the ring. I find that he's very basic.
He does a lot of power moves. He's your power wrestler, right? And that's good. That's a good role for him.
You're right. You're right. I mean, in terms of sticking to his style, for sure.
I mean,
but I just, for some, if you're going to be the champion, you got to go above and beyond, and I just haven't quite seen that yet. But that being said, I wasn't at the last show, so I could be talking, you know, out of my ass. Just my opinion from what I've seen up until that last show.
Yeah. So anyways, continuing on with ECCW, this Friday, the 4th of February, they've got a show out at the Russian Community Center in Vancouver, and that show is called Vendetta.
Now, we should remind everyone that if you do want to check this or anything else out with ECCW, hit up their website, www.eccw.com.
That's right. You can also buy tickets on their webpage as well. So this card is going to feature Scotty Mac taking on Andy the Dreadful Bird. Then we're going to have a match with The Rocket Randy Tyler. He's going to be taking on the Loose Cannon, Kenny Lush. Then we're going to have a Falls Count Anywhere match, Corey, with Bishop and Jason Sullivan. So two big guys kind of going at it in a Falls Count Anywhere match. What do you think that's going to be like?
Well, anything with Jason Sullivan is always an entertaining, you know, big man match. I'm very interested to see Jason
Sullivan. I like Jason Sullivan.
I didn't realize that he actually is from Oregon. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, either. He's not a local guy. He actually lives down in Oregon. Or at least he wrestles in Oregon on a regular basis. I don't know where he exactly resides, but I know he does not reside in Vancouver. So that's interesting.
And then we're going to have a ECCW Tag Team Championship match, and that's going to have The Riot, who are the champions right now. And The Riot is kind of like a stable. They got Ravenous Randy. Yep. They got Nicole Matthews. They got Alex Plexus. And
I'm pretty sure that this match will be Ravenous Randy and Alex Plexus versus the Bollywood Lions, right?
That's right. They're back from their stint in India.
Harv and Gurv Sira.
I hope they win. I like the Bollywood Lions.
That would mean they're recapturing their titles.
That's right.
You think that's going to happen?
I could see it happening.
What about the main event?
And your main event for the evening is for the NWA Canadian Heavyweight Championship. And that's going to feature Cremator Von Slasher, who last week won the handicap match. And he's going to be taking on your champion, Artemis Spencer. So what do you think about that match? It's a big guy, and Artemis Spencer, he's not the biggest guy, but his in-ring talent is...
Yeah, I'm going to go and say that Artemis retains, but that being said, it's a very interesting matchup, probably a good main event for sure.
So again, this is this Friday, the 4th of February, out in Vancouver at the Russian Community Center. Like we said, for more information to buy tickets, you can visit their website at www.eccw.com. Now, if you are interested in tickets, front row tickets are $18. General admission is $15. The doors open at 7:30 p.m. and your bell time is at 8 o'clock, so check it out.
Next week, let's try and bring Corey Basso, the expert, back on the show.
Definitely.
Have him update the world on the world of local wrestling, because you and I just haven't been able to get out.
We're just stumbling through it right now. So.
Oh, well, we tried our best.
Yeah.
Just like I'm sure the ECCW is trying their best. It's a symbiotic relationship.
I got to totally agree with you.
All right, coming up on Smack Talk Radio Live, we got one segment left. And James, what is that?
It's tonight's top five. And like I said before, top five Undertaker returns. I'm excited.
Here we are, Smack Talk Radio Live.
Yeah.
You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live. Helping you remember what most of us couldn't. Tonight's top five.
All right, we are back. You are listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, and this is tonight's top five. We are going to be covering the top five Undertaker returns. Now, the interesting thing, Corey, I got to point out, when I was making this list, I could have easily made this list a top 10 list. You know how many times The Undertaker has disappeared and then returned again?
Well, he's got like the lightest work schedule out of anyone on the roster.
It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe how many times, but...
But when you're The Undertaker, you kind of call the shots.
Well, he deserves it. I mean, look what the guy's done in his career, so...
There you go.
Let's kick it off with number five. CM Punk gets punked. Now, this happened back at the SummerSlam of 2009. Now, in 2009, CM Punk was rising the ranks of the WWE at a very fast pace. He proclaimed himself straight edge, which in his opinion made him better than everyone else, including Jeff Hardy, who had a known history of substance abuse problems. Now, Punk wanted to regain the World Heavyweight Championship, which he believed had been stolen from him, and he would get his chance at SummerSlam against Hardy in a tables, ladders, and chairs match. Now, after a hard-fought battle between both men, Punk would come through on his promise and reclaim the title. Standing over his vanquished opponent, Punk would raise the belt over his head and give the audience a very smug look. Now, this feeling of security, though, wouldn't last long, as the arena was then plunged into darkness and the familiar gong of The Undertaker was heard. When the lights came back on, Punk looked around in horror as The Undertaker had made a surprise appearance and proceeded to deliver a devastating chokeslam to the heavyweight champion.
Very interesting. Do you think that would still happen if it was Punk versus Undertaker at this year's WrestleMania?
Probably not, no.
I think Punk's stock has risen a little bit.
Just a little bit.
All right, number four, the true Dead Man triumphs. This was 1994 at the SummerSlam pay-per-view. Now, after being attacked and brutalized by over 10 men in his casket match against Yokozuna at the Royal Rumble, The Undertaker vowed to return to the WWE and take vengeance on all those who had attacked him. Everyone in the crowd watched in amazement as The Undertaker's spirit left the arena and would not be seen again for a few months. The Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, who first brought The Undertaker to the WWE, proclaimed to everyone that he had found The Undertaker and had once again brought him back to the WWE. The Undertaker looked like the real deal and continued his dominance of WWE superstars, which had everyone convinced DiBiase was right. However, Undertaker's manager, Paul Bearer, insisted that he knew where the real Undertaker was and DiBiase had brought back a fraud. He would then challenge the new Undertaker to face his Undertaker to determine once and for all who the real one was. DiBiase accepted, and a match was made at SummerSlam where the true Undertaker made a memorable reappearance and defeated the fake Undertaker.
To me, that was one of the most memorable storylines growing up as a wrestling fan, was the Undertaker versus Undertaker
totally.
Match.
Totally. So, I totally agree.
That was really cool.
Now, this will bring us to number three, To Kill a Legend Killer. This was Survivor Series 2005. In 2005, Randy Orton was a superstar on the rise. He had made his presence known during his time in the Evolution stable, but he really started to become a main eventer when he began taking out the legends of the business. This gave rise to the nickname The Legend Killer. Orton's first victim after being drafted to SmackDown that year was to be The Undertaker. The two would go on to face each other at various points throughout the year until the rivalry culminated when The Undertaker faced off against both Orton and his father, Cowboy Bob Orton, in a casket match at the No Mercy pay-per-view. Now, at this pay-per-view, Orton then decided to take matters to a whole new level when he trapped The Undertaker inside the casket and lit it on fire. It had seemed as though Orton had once again added yet another name to his list of killed legends. Orton would then reach a peak near the end of the year at Survivor Series when he was the lone survivor in a Raw vs. SmackDown match. The Undertaker, though, whose appearance had been previously advertised for Survivor Series, made his comeback by emerging from a burning casket and decimating the majority of the SmackDown roster before he could finally get his hands on the man, Randy Orton.
That was a really good rivalry that year. That was one of the best rivalries of 2005, in my opinion, was that Undertaker-Randy Orton. Mm-hmm. Really good matches, and it was really cool seeing Cowboy Bob Orton come back and kind of get himself involved into the whole mix again. So this will bring us to number two, Brother vs. Brother, and this was in March of 1998. Now, since his surprise debut at the Bad Blood pay-per-view, Kane, who was revealed to be The Undertaker's brother, was an unstoppable monster who had come to the WWE to seek retribution for unresolved issues from when they were children. However, The Undertaker would refuse to fight his younger brother and allowed Kane to beat him down time and time again. After a few weeks, though, it seemed as if Kane had forgiven The Undertaker after he'd rescued him from a potential beatdown, but it turned out all along that this was just part of Paul Bearer's master plot to get rid of The Undertaker. Kane would then shock the WWE Universe by ambushing his brother and burning him alive in a casket at the Royal Rumble. After seemingly disposing of his brother, Kane turned his attention to the rest of the WWE superstars and appeared to have complete control until The Undertaker made a surprise return on Raw and proclaimed that he was ready to face Kane in a match at WrestleMania 14. Now, after an epic battle by both men at WrestleMania, The Undertaker would eventually emerge victorious in the bout after delivering not one, Corey, not two, but three tombstones to his younger brother.
You know, Kane versus Undertaker was a match that I also could have thought happened at this year's WrestleMania, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Well, this will bring us to our number one spot. There you have it. Tonight, our number one spot. It's the revival of the Dead Man, and of course, this happened at WrestleMania 20 in Madison Square Garden. Now, after unsuccessfully trying to capture the WWE Championship, The Undertaker engaged in a rivalry and attempted to finish off Mr. McMahon once and for all at the Survivor Series 2002 in a Buried Alive match. But things did not go according to plan, though, as his brother Kane once again came back to haunt The Undertaker and interfered in the match to help Mr. McMahon bury him alive. Kane would justify his actions by saying that The Undertaker had turned into an ordinary person, was no longer a phenom, no longer a monster. It seemed as though The Undertaker was finally thwarted by Kane until cryptic messages started to appear, hinting towards a potential return of The Undertaker as the Dead Man at WrestleMania 20. Kane, though, would continually insist that his brother was not returning, and after enduring several weeks of mind games, Kane's worst nightmare came true as The Undertaker ditched his American Badass biker gimmick and returned as the Dead Man to defeat his brother for the second time on the grandest stage of them all. So there you have it.
WrestleMania 20 from Madison Square Gardens.
That had that famous Brock Lesnar versus Goldberg match.
Mm-hmm. Also when Eddie Guerrero won the championship.
And when Chris Benoit won the championship as well.
That's right. Do you think that they'll have WrestleMania 30 in New York?
I don't know. You know, it's kind of tough to say because they kind of like going to the big arenas now where you can, you know, fit 60,000 plus people, right?
Mm-hmm.
You go to Madison Square Garden, what's the maximum capacity there? Like 25,000 maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's, they might go back there to kind of keep with nostalgia and tradition, but
the big question will be, will The Undertaker be making a re-debut at WrestleMania 30?
He should be retired by then.
Oh, look at you.
20-0, I think that'll be it, man.
Possibly burying the big man at WrestleMania 28 or 29 is what you're saying.
No, I don't think the streak's going to end. We talked about this earlier.
Oh. But then you just said that. To me, I think that WrestleMania, I think that The Undertaker streak will end when he's ready to retire. Like, how else are you going to, if it's not that, then how will they officially say, okay, The Undertaker's done, he's not wrestling anymore?
I don't know how they'll do it. They'll figure out some way to finally bury him once and for all. But I think the streak at WrestleMania, that's just going to be one of those legendary untouchables in the professional wrestling business.
Hmm.
And that's just what I think. So.
So you're saying no re-debut at 30. That's interesting.
We'll have to wait and see what happens. Who knows? I could be wrong. This is wrestling, right? You can never.
That is true.
You can, you know, the switch things on you at the flip of a dime. And I mean, Sheamus winning the Royal Rumble is perfect proof of that, I think.
I think if The Undertaker comes back, next year he should come back as the American Badass, and that would be the new number one for a re-debut of The Undertaker.
Okay, now I think you're talking out your ass.
Were you a fan of that gimmick or no?
Not really, no.
No?
No, I mean, the dead man is what made him. I mean, that's, to be honest, that has to be, as far as gimmicks go, that has to be one of the best, if not the best gimmick in the history of professional wrestling.
Will he still be credible if he shows up at WrestleMania 28 without hair? What if he takes off his hat and there's just, he's bald?
The extensions fall out and he's bald?
Are you still buying the Undertaker character?
Well, he won't look as scary, I guess, but it'll be a shot to his credibility for sure.
All right, well, we got to get out of here. We're already way over time.
Again?
The show just creeps up higher and higher each week on how long it runs. But this was another edition of Smack Talk Radio Live, a special Friday edition.
Yep.
We're, of course, back on Monday for SRL on a Monday night. More leading towards the next pay-per-view, which is, of course, the Elimination Chamber.
And before we get out of here, I just got to throw the reminder to everybody again. You know, get involved. Visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/smacktalkradio. Leave us a comment. Leave us an opinion. Also, we have an email, onair@smacktalkradiolive.com. Again, throw us your thoughts. If it's any good, it doesn't suck, well, of course, we'll read it on the air.
We're also going to broadcast the show live on Monday. So Monday, 9 o'clock Pacific, right after the early edition of Raw. If you're interested in taking part, just come on, check it out, log on live, and we'll go from there.
Sounds good.
I'm also going to try and get an interview with THQ. I want to ask him about No Mercy.
That would be very interesting.
I'm just going to ask him one question. Hey, why haven't you come up with No Mercy? That's it. What? That's your answer? Okay, bye. Then hang up on the guy. Will that work?
I don't know. All right, everybody. I'm James McDonald.
Cut me off.
That's right. We got to get out of here. You're the one that just said we're over on time. So.
All right. I'm Corey Callahan. We'll see you on Monday.